Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, one night in Paris, that shocker in the Stade de France. Ireland were brave, but Thierry Henry had something up his sleeve, his hand. The pod salutes Traps Chaps and says boo to the French knickers and their cherry picker. And we round up the rest of the final qualifiers too, including, they're a sixth of the size of Moscow, but they've beaten Russia to a World Cup slot, step forward, Slovenia. Elsewhere, there's Sid on the blower from España, Your Post, and the return of the Premier League this weekend, including Liverpool Man City and what they're calling the biggest battle for fourth since Chris Eubank trained as a Jedi. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. On board today, listeners, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Paul Doyle.
Hello.
Sean Ingle.
Hello.
And celebrity cerebrum Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
More long faces than the than Christmas at the Van Nistelrooy's around this table. Obviously, one or two disappointed people. Although, Barry, you were doing the minute by minute.
Yes.
As you said, it's not the disappointment that kills you, it's the hope.
That's exactly it, yeah. Mm. I think Last Tango in Paris would have been a better film for you to allude to in your intro. Mm. What would the manner in which Ireland were rogered vigorously from behind after being lubed up by FIFA? But, I mean, where do you start? It hasn't really sunk in for me yet. Trapattoni was quite calm about it in the aftermath of the game, and I am too. I think maybe I'll be out doing the shopping on Saturday and I'll break down it in the aisle of the supermarket and start weeping beside the pasta sauce or something. But Ireland had their chances to win the game in 90 minutes, didn't take them. They got shafted by a goal that shouldn't have been allowed. The cries for video technology are in. And, it's just one of those things that happens.
Mm.
People get stiffed in football matches. This time it was our turn. It's very unfortunate, but they should have won in normal time.
Yeah. So at least there hasn't been the usual chance of a politician calling for a replay or anything like that.
Yeah, that was the Irish Justice Minister, Dermot O'Hearn, has called on FIFA, demanded a replay from FIFA, but that man is a buffoon. He's a noted homophobe who said homosexuals shouldn't be tolerated. And he also slipped a law onto the Irish Constitution making blasphemy a crime. So this is the level of moron we're dealing with here. I wouldn't really pay any attention to what he said. And as far as I know, FIFA aren't going to either. They've said there will not be a replay. And there shouldn't be a replay.
No. All right,
But there should be video technology.
Right, okay. Well, Paul Doyle, interesting, yes. You got L'Équipe there with a big Le Main de Dieu on the front page. And the French, they haven't called their captain on Wednesday night a cheat, but they have been pretty clear about the fact that it was an enormous handball, as the front cover says.
Well, yeah, I mean, they couldn't deny it, could they? I mean, even Henri hasn't denied it. Interestingly, he said that he told the ref that it was handball as well.
I'm not sure he did. I've seen that translated elsewhere. Because I think he said, I told him, and I've seen that translated as Richard Dunn, when he went up to him at the end, just to rub it in.
Okay.
And said, yeah, it was a handball.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah, because I didn't certainly see him approach the ref as he was wheeling off in celebration at his fortunate goal. But obviously, there's a lot of conspiracy theories going out in the wake of this. And that's one reason why video technology should be introduced, to protect FIFA from such conspiracy theories. If they have obviously mistakes are made, but authorities have an obligation to try and at least appear transparent. And in refusing to embrace video technology, it's just a clear dereliction of duty.
Well, I mean, people know that I've banged and banged and banged and banged and banged about technology for years and years. You have traditions that say, oh, but football rules, they never change, they're sacrosanct, the referee's decision is always final. But the history of football rules is exploitation by players followed by correction from the authorities. I mean, in 1891, for instance, there was no referee or no penalties because it was assumed that a gentleman would never intentionally foul. Things like the offside law, things like professional fouls have all come about because players cheat. So there's that argument. There's the whole, well, it would slow the game down too much argument. But there are ways around that. You could say to a team, well, you can have three challenges each to stop that happening. But I think the crucial thing about technology is, A, it's fairer. But B, also, it changes the risk and reward debate that zips around a player's head. So instead of diving, instead of, running away in celebration, well, there's no point because, the opposition manager can throw out a towel and say, I'm challenging that. And then 30 seconds later, we move on. And if technology isn't clear, then the referee decision on the pitch is final.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the word gentleman, because if there's one thing that Thierry Henry has always tried to portray himself as in his unctuous posturing in every possible interview, is a gentleman and an exceptional sportsman as well as being a good player. Well, it would have taken an exceptional sportsman to own up to the handball last night, and even some of the Irish players admitted that if they thought they'd have gotten away with it, they would have done the same. But what Henry showed us is that he's not an exceptional sports person.
If we had video technology, then France would have got a penalty.
No, that's wrong.
It's not wrong, because I checked when I went home. I watched it several times.
There was contact, but it wasn't.
Sorry, can I just finish what I'm going to say, then you can have your speak. I watched several times when I went home. From the reverse angle, it's quite clear that Shea Given grabbed his ankle with his right hand and brought him down. Yeah, that should have been a penalty.
And was video on his way down. And Given did touch his ankle, but it wasn't a foul. And
he
was interesting because there was a difference in mindset in the way the French and Irish players approached the match. The French knew that they were going to, there was a good chance that they would get any sort of 50-50 decision. And you had the result. So Anelka threw himself to the ground the way Evra did in Dublin in a similar situation in the first leg. And Robbie Keane, for example, when he went around Lloris and the ball ran out, didn't go to ground because he knew he wasn't going to get a penalty.
Well, this sort of defeats the whole argument for video evidence now, because I've studied it closely. I say it was a penalty. Paul has presumably studied it closely, and he said it wasn't.
Yeah, but we've both seen the goal, and we both know that was handball. So video technology won't resolve every debatable issue, but certainly
if by careful study of a video you still can't see that Shea Given grabbed Anelka's ankle, which he did,
but Anelka had already started the dive.
That is irrelevant.
Well, it's not, because Anelka had already made the dive.
This old chestnut, Jonathan.
But this is the point that needs clarifying. If a goalkeeper throws himself at the feet of a forward, and the forward then has to take evasive action, is that or is that not a penalty? And I've seen both views. I don't know the answer. And that's one of the things that really needs
falling
to be...
Falling over is not... There's a difference. A punishable offence. Grabbing a goalkeeper grabbing an on rushing striker's ankle is. It's a trip. It's a penalty.
Taking evasive action and leaving your foot somewhere where you know the goalkeeper is going to.
But
go.
If you have to take evasive action and you wouldn't get the foul given, if contact isn't made, if you then generate that contact, that's kind of an understandable grey area. And that's why I think it needs to be made clear. If you have to take evasive action for the challenge, that is then a foul.
Can I just... it should also be worth pointing out that the blogosphere has gone absolutely crazy about this. Thierry Henry's trending. France and Ireland are both trending. Also, Wikipedia pages... Trending. I know you don't use Twitter, Jim.
They're trending on the blogosphere.
On Twitter, which means they're very, very popular and all sorts of people are talking about them. But on the Wikipedia page on cheating... Someone has written, the biggest example of cheating in the history of sport was on the 18th of November by Thierry Henry.
Well, there you go. He's under a lot of pressure, but he's shown that he can handle it. So
interestingly, someone has pointed out that his handball would even be illegal in basketball.
dear me. Well, plenty of tweets actually here in the Football Weekly. Andy Graham says, should FIFA give Henry a ban? They can't overturn the result, but they could do something to promote their fair play idea. Paul McKinney's of Rival podcast, Bitter Rivals Music Weekly. They even nicked our title.
He's bitter, we're not.
Yeah. what would be an appropriate punishment for Thierry Henry? It's an interesting question, perhaps.
I don't think he should be punished. Yeah.
What was it deliberate? Was it a kind of...
Well, that's an interesting question.
Thing?
He claims it wasn't.
Well, he's the only person who knows, but I think there's a very good chance he was unsighted because there's an Irish defender jumped just in front of him and missed it.
Paul McShane, who shouldn't let the ball bounce in the first place, but that's another...
The arm goes out, the ball hits it. All right. I don't know. It's an instinctive thing. I don't know whether it's deliberate or not.
It's a tricky one. Plenty of people posting in as well, suggesting that the Irish were mugged. A couple of dissenting voices. Bric-a-brac says, as if the Irish can talk, Robbie Keane tried to get away with handling the ball twice in the French penalty area. Twice he was caught. Irish cheat. And then he goes on about Tony Cascarino. Roy A1, yes, it was handball, and yes, he got away with it. It doesn't make him any more of a cheat than Robbie Keane. In the first half, the reason Ireland lost is that they twice missed clear one-on-one chances in the second half, and boy, did they.
But I think a lot of Irish people are sort of revelling in this misfortune. You know, Paddy's always been under the yoke of oppression. He likes a good whinge, and we'll get over it.
Okay, now Ireland, behind all of this controversy, the fact is that they went to Paris with very few people rating their chances and outplayed the French. A fantastic performance. How were they suddenly able to come up with that?
Well, that's interesting from a French point of view. They have a big decision to make. Obviously, they've reached the World Cup with Dominic in charge. But I would suggest that what the two legs and most of the qualifying campaign have shown us is that if they are to have any chance of doing anything at the World Cup, they should get a manager, because they were a team who were playing. It was just a bunch of players. There was no guidance or design. Unlike Ireland, who certainly in the second leg, Trapattoni could claim he got the best out of his squad of players, and France manifestly are not.
Outside Spain and Brazil, France, you know, with the right coach, you know, are among those group of teams, you know, possibly Argentina, possibly England, possibly one or two others that could win the World Cup. You know, you look at the strength of their squad, but then you've got this mad stargazer manager who is, you know, leading them, I think, probably to a last 16 exit the way he's going.
I mean, there's a French journalist I was speaking to last week, and he was saying he thinks that Dominic is very unlikely to be sacked, purely because there's no culture of sacking managers in France, or certainly for the national team. And the idea of having to pay somebody off is completely anathema to them.
Although, if you're going, he's also very cheap. He's only on about a quarter of what Trapattoni is on, for
example. I mean, the pressure he's under now, how does that compare to, say, the pressure Aimé Jacquet was under in 98?
That's a good point. He's a bit of a protege of Jacquet, actually. He worked under Jacquet at Lyon. And as you say, before the 98 World Cup, Jacquet was ridiculed in the French press, and he enjoyed this glorious vindication afterwards, when Dominic clearly lusts for that sort of vindication as well. But I can't see how it's going to happen.
Well, L'Equipe certainly jumping on that particular bandwagon today, saying 14 months, they still haven't come up with a convincing performance, this French team. Wednesday was catastrophic. It's legitimate to say, when's he going to go?
And all the controversy aside, I was really proud of the Irish performance. I can't fault any of them. Kilbane, who's much maligned, was fantastic. Liam Lawrence and Damien Duff on the wings were probably played the games of their lives. And but for some errant finishing, Doyle had a good chance. John O'Shea had a half-decent chance. Robbie Keane and Damien Duff missed excellent chances. We really should have won.
Was this their best performance in years?
I think it was definitely, I'd say possibly since maybe 1992.
Yeah.
They went to Paris, everyone expected them to sit back, try and soak up the pressure and get a goal in the break, and they just didn't do that. They attacked down the flanks. When they couldn't attack down the flanks, they sent long balls in over the top, which France's defenders struggled to deal with. And, you know, if there was any justice in the world, Ireland would have gone through. And at the end of the day, they unfortunately only have themselves to blame for not going through.
Well, it's poignant, though, isn't it? Because, you know, the end of a generation, probably. You're not going to see, Robbie Keane, probably, but, I don't know, Shea Given, Duff, are they going to be around in another World Cup qualifying campaign?
I would say possibly not Duff. I mean, the calls, laughable calls for a replay, say we had got a replay, it's difficult to imagine Ireland playing that well again, and it's difficult to imagine France playing that badly again. So,
if there's one good thing that came out of it, and that comes out of the continued refusal to use technology, it's the fact that, much like in the way the draws teach you in life, that sometimes you have to compromise, and there's not always black and white solutions to things. Blatant injustices in something that's relatively trivial, like football, teach you to constantly question authority in other domains. So it's a good lesson for the kids. That's what I was telling my son as he was crying into his supper last night.
Right. I find there's a Chris Rea song that's very in these situations. But
Driving Home for Christmas.
That's the one, yeah. Good. All right. Well, this just in then, Ireland out of the World Cup qualifiers and France are through, along with all sorts of other countries. In part two, we are going to be having a look through the other Wednesday night winners as we head back towards the return of club football this weekend.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, Portugal, Slovenia and Greece also booking their places at South Africa, after Wednesday's playoffs. Portugal, a 1-0 win for them against Bosnia, away to Bosnia-Herzegovina. Quite a comeback, this, for Carlos Queiroz's side, because they looked well out of it at one point, didn't they? They were fourth in their group. And
well, it's Bosnia, Ukraine and Russia we're talking about now, so we should just hand the floor to Jonathan and we can all kick back for 10 minutes.
Particularly for Slovenia. Slovenia, this nation, with a population of what, Jonathan?
Down about 2 million.
2 million?
Extraordinary achievement.
Put that in perspective for us.
It's about a sixth of the size of London or Moscow. It's
same size as Ireland.
Well, about half the size of the Republic of Ireland. Slightly larger than Northern Ireland, I guess. So.
Right. But how big is Russia then?
143 million.
Wow, that's what, 71 and a half times?
But it was fantastic last night seeing in this tiny stadium in Maribor, seeing Dmitry Medvedev, the Russian president, Abramovich, the head of Gazprom, sitting in a row, their faces getting more and more miserable. And apparently they all landed in private jets in Maribor Airport, and plane spotters are going from miles around to these planes they've never seen before. So, I mean, to qualify for World Cup once from a country that small is extraordinary. To do it twice, it's not even that they've done it in successive World Cups, it's the same squad. To do it with two completely different squads is an absolutely astonishing achievement.
Well, how good is this squad then?
It's terrible. That's a really great thing about it. Even in 2002, they had Zlatko Zahavic, who was a proper player. You look at this squad, and you know, their captain's Robert Cohen, who can't get in the West Brom team. So I think huge credit to Matthias Keck, the manager. And bear in mind the pressure he was under after the European qualifiers, when they finished sixth in the group, behind Belarus, behind Albania, behind Bulgaria. For him to turn that around and produce a performance he didn't qualify, and then the performances over the last 5 days is great credit to him.
Although Saturday they equally looked completely out of the playoffs.
Well, they did.
Until that late goal.
And they played they played well in patches, and the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes on Saturday really came into it. I think from Russia's point of view, they've got to really worry for the future that Sergei Siemak went off after an hour on Saturday and Slovenia come back into it. He didn't start last night. He comes on at half-time and things pick up for Russia. He's 33. I assume Hiddink's reasoning for not playing him, he's sort of the holding midfielder, gives a bit of balance and shape to the midfield. I assume Hiddink's reason for not playing him is his legs are starting to go. So if he's not there in the future, which he clearly won't be, you know, where do Russia go?
Hmm. That's what I was going to ask you. How much is Hiddink to blame for this failure? Because they were totally outplayed last night from what I saw. And I see this morning that there's suggestions in Nigeria that they might try and get Hiddink on board for the World Cup. I mean,
as we said on Monday, I think Nigeria will be looking for a European coach. So I think it's entirely plausible they will be looking. I'd be amazed if Hiddink went there. I think he'd cost too much. I think Hiddink may be tempted if Russia's salary offer is good enough to stay on for another 2 years. I think he possibly now will feel he's got something to give back to Russia, because he has been criticised in the press this morning there.
Suicide was the headline on the Russian sports daily Sport Express. Thanks went on, to Slasher for posting that.
Our worst nightmare, a dark pall cast over the national team. We lack killer instinct and tactical vision. They also made the interesting point that a lot of players now playing outside of Russia, so they possibly don't have the same unity that they used to. Mm. And there's been a few grumblings over qualification campaign that possibly certain players getting a bit too big for their boots, getting a bit carried away. But I think certainly the Slovenians had this impression of Russian arrogance. And I don't think it looks good for Russia, with the benefit of hindsight, that before the playoffs, they changed their kit. And they changed to this, I think maybe the last 2 games of the qualifying campaign and the playoffs, they changed to this dark red kit, which is supposed to be the colour of the Kremlin walls. It's got motifs from the Kremlin in the weave of the shirt. It's got little gold bits all over the place. It's incredibly kind of over the top in a horrible nouveau riche, new money Russian way.
It sounds very nouveau riche, Russian, Moscow, you know, the big bling you see whenever you're out, you know, if you ever go abroad. There's always these fat Russian businessmen with gold chains jingling and jangling like they're Mr. T without the Mohican. And it just sounds
It's not unlike that, certainly. But I think just to introduce a new shirt right at the end of the qualifiers, it's kind of say, well, yeah, we're going to the World Cup. This is our World Cup shirt. And now what is it? Now it's just the shirt that they didn't qualify for the World Cup in.
But do you have loads of Russian kids walking around like you do in England with their, you know, their Reebok trainers and their white England top? Is that, you get that in Moscow?
Probably not to the same extent you do here, but certainly replica shirt sales make some money in Russia, yeah. The one thing that Russia would have to complain about last night was the sending off of Kozhakov just after the hour. That there was a challenge with Handanovic, the goalkeeper. The ball came loose, he wagged the leg at it. He took some of the ball and his studs probably carried through and handed on his thigh. He got a red card for it. I think that was very, very harsh. But Russia were getting significantly outplayed even at that stage. Then Zhirkov sent off an injury time for
pushing over a ball boy.
A substitute.
Was it a substitute?
Substitute. Oh, who brilliantly landed on the ground, sat there looking very dismayed, then this huge grin spreads over his face and he realises what it means.
Oh, dearie me. Well, there you go. They're out. Slovenia in. Well done to them. Greece, making their first appearance at the World Cup final since 1994. They were at Euro 2008, of course, where they lost all of their group games, scoring just one goal, so that promises well. And
it's not unfair not to mention them winning Euro 2004 if you're giving up.
Do we have to mention that again? All right, they won Euro 2004. Lazaro posting in, complaining the fact that we only gave us, he put it, one frickin' line to Uruguay's 1-0 away win at Costa Rica in the first leg of that clash. Sorry about that, Lazaro. I'm sure we'll do more in-depth stuff on the Uruguayans soon enough. But in the meantime, they are now through after a 1-1 draw with Costa Rica on Wednesday. And finally, completing the World Cup picture, the last African place taken by Algeria. A humdinger of a match in Khartoum Wednesday evening. Paul, were you witness to this?
I didn't see it.
All right. Jonathan, you were?
Yes.
Yes. It was kind of all poised to kind of go off in every sense, really. 15,000 riot police, etc., and you know, early scuffles on the pitch, but never really caught fire, the game.
It was a decent game. It wasn't the sort of bloodbath you might have expected, certainly. I think Algeria, bloodbath purely in the sense of players getting lumped at each other. That's all I meant by that.
Hmm.
I think Algeria probably deserved it. I mean, Egypt had
a great goal.
Egypt had a lot of possession, didn't really know what to do with it. A lot of aimless crosses in the box. It's like watching England on a bad day.
Well, there you go. That's the World Cup picture then. 7 months to go to the finals, and we're all agog with anticipation. In the meantime, though, we've got the return of the Premier League this weekend, so we're going to be previewing the weekend's matches in a couple of minutes. And, first of all, right after this musical interlude, we are going to be hearing from Sid Lowe. Sid Lowe, in Spain.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, Sid. As are the pod crew. Sean was just entertaining us with a little demonstration of his boxing training, and
I've seen that many a time before.
Have you
beaten himself up yet? Yeah.
No, but apparently
Sean is an extremely impressive shadow boxer.
Right. Apparently, he's not the only impressive one. Mrs. John Ashdown as well.
Mrs. John Ashdown is an absolute demon. Her name's Rachel. She there's a period in the class where lads have to hold their hands above their head, and Rachel and the other girls just leash hooks and uppercuts at them, and Rachel does it harder and faster and better than
what? Where is she aiming?
Between the sort of the chest and the lower midriff.
But you're not allowed to defend yourself.
You're not allowed to defend yourself. So she just hammers at your way at your midsection. And now and again, the odd blow goes low, but you just have to take it.
If anyone tunes into this and didn't hear the start of that anecdote, they're going to be very, very puzzled and slightly turned on.
Right. Crikey. Well, Sid, it's a tough act to follow, but what have you got from us from the crazy world of Spanish football?
Well, the thing that's really made me laugh this week is the righteous indignation that surrounded Fabio Capello all week. The Spanish have gone absolutely crazy. I say the Spanish, that's a little bit unfair. Certain sections of the Spanish media have gone absolutely crazy over what was, I thought, pretty much a throwaway remark, and a fairly reasonable throwaway remark as well from Capello, who after the England game, obviously at the weekend what happened was that England played Brazil and almost immediately afterwards Spain played Argentina. And I have to say, England and Spain play completely different sports right now. Spain were phenomenal in the first half against Argentina, really genuinely brilliant. And after the game, Capello said, yeah, but you know, Brazil defend better than Spain. Spain technically are very, very good with the ball. They're wonderful in possession, but Brazil are that little bit physically stronger and they defend better. And then he said, again, with some justification, although of course it is an argument you can also pick apart, against Spain in a friendly in Seville in February, we created 3 or 4 chances, even though Spain were the better side. Against Brazil, we created none. I think Brazil defend ever so slightly better. People here have gone crazy. Yesterday, Spain beat Austria, thrashed Austria, in fact. And the front page headline on one of the newspapers was, "To Capello, with love."
Wow. Little bit sensitive then. Dublin.
Well, they've got no reason to be sensitive because they are brilliant at the moment, Spain. And actually, obviously, some of the arguments they've put forward are absolutely right. That Spain have conceded fewer goals than Brazil, so there's an argument about defending. And certainly, Spain defend themselves with the ball better than anybody else, because one of the things I've always said whenever you've asked me, for example, is that if you pick them out individually, there are some weaknesses in Spain's back four, but they so rarely keep the ball because they so rarely see the ball because the midfield keeps it so well. So that's certainly true. Spain do defend better in that sense, but I do think it's bizarre because there's no reason to be sensitive because they're so good right now. They should just kind of wave and go, yeah, whatever, Fabio.
Mm. Now, you mentioned the 5-1 thrashing of Austria there at the Vienna Stadium. David Villa with a brace there. He's now up to 35 goals in 54 appearances.
I don't know how many times I have to say the same thing, but I'm going to say it again. David Villa is the best striker in the world. He is unbelievably good. And I think it's a real shame from an English perspective, at least from a Premiership perspective, that he's so reluctant to go to England. That's something that, incidentally, that may change this summer because, of course, the two big options he had, which were Madrid and Barcelona, closed on him last summer because they couldn't pay the money that Valencia demanded. I suspect neither of them will come back for him this summer. So he is starting to waver, at least that's certainly what I'm hearing, waver very slightly on whether actually maybe he should go to England after
all. Sid, on transfer gossip, one of the things that's been going around in England this week is the Kun Aguero to Chelsea for 40 million. Do you know anything more about that?
Yeah, the situation there is that I have absolutely no doubt, well, not no doubt, because all sorts of things happen, but I'm fairly convinced that he will leave Atletico Madrid within the next year. What I'm not so sure about is if Chelsea can find the kind of money that Atletico Madrid will demand during the winter transfer window. But, of course, from Chelsea's point of view, they kind of have to because it's their one last chance. Atletico Madrid's chief shareholder claimed that they'd had a 42 million euro bid from Chelsea in the summer and that they turned it down. But right now he would bite Chelsea's hand off to get that kind of money. So I think it's something that's got a very, very good chance of happening.
Excellent. And on the Liga point of view, you've got Real Madrid with an easier fixture this weekend than Barcelona, who are away at Bilbao, which could set things up nicely for next week's El Clasico.
Yeah, it would set things up very nicely indeed. I mean, you've got, say, going away to Bilbao, generally speaking, is a pretty good, pretty difficult test for anybody. I think Barcelona are a side that have got a really, really awful month ahead of them. And this is where Madrid, I think, can take some comfort. That Barcelona have got a month where they play Inter Milan at Real Madrid in a row. They go and play the World Club Championship. Then, ridiculously, they've got a friendly in Kuwait at the end of it. They've got 9 games between the 21st of November and the 21st of December, including some pretty big ones. And it starts with this weekend, whereas Real Madrid play Racing Santander at home. So I think it could be set up for Madrid not only to be in a very good position going into the Clásico, but also possibly to be top of the table at Christmas.
Crikey. Sid, thank you very much for that. Look forward to your roundup of it all on Monday.
My pleasure. Speak to them.
Thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
One or two posts. We had that Colin Peacock on Monday's Football Weekly, which sparked a bit of New Zealand ovine punnery from posters. Martinza tried to create a sheep all-star 11. He's got Andy Gorham in goal, Ibrahim Bar, Lambros Lambrou, Hugh Kelly, right, okay, Bobby Shearer, Paolo Onechop, Frank Lampard, Aaron Ramsey, Eusebio, Ivan Zamorano, not sure how that one fits in, and Rudy Voller, not sure how, yeah, you'd want Shearer up front, wouldn't you? No? Philip Lam, as Ponzero points out, Philip Lam at left back, and not drowning, just waving, suggests Mourinho as the manager. Which I have to say, we're getting blank looks here, but that's mainly because
Ibrahim Ba on the bench.
We had Ibrahim Ba.
Oh,
there.
Did you? Sorry.
Yeah. That was in the bit you weren't listening to.
Yeah.
All right then. Other posts relating to Monday, where we discussed whether Tintin had ever made it as far as Khartoum. The witch discussion then sparked this realization from Art Deco. Jimbo, it's so obvious now, the entire pod is your subconscious reenactment of the adventures of Tintin. You want to be Tintin, but in your nightmares, that is Sid, the bright travelling reporter with a dog. Makes sense, doesn't it? While you, Jimbo, are Dr. Muller. Have you ever seen Dr. Muller? Tell you what, Art Deco's not wrong. Barry is Captain Haddock, tick. The boozing foul-mouthed sidekick, yep. Doyle is the softly spoken Nesta. That one doesn't work for me. No. Fernando Duarte is the is what?
I don't want to be a butler.
No, you don't.
You can do better than that.
No. Fernando Duarte is a mix of General Alcazar and Oliveira de Figueira. That's about right. The question is, who is your Professor Calculus? Is it Jonathan Wilson, the brain in the jar, visiting from the realm of pure thought? Or is it Sean with his bizarre analogies and statistics? Or is Shawnee Snowy, he says, Art Deco. Well, I hope you've...
One of the Thompson twins.
I'm going to have to read Tintin, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really? You've not read Tintin?
I know that Tintin looks like Jimmy Somerville, and that is the only thing I know about it.
Right, well, I
must have had a deprived childhood.
Did you ever go and see Jimmy Somerville live, Jimbo, as part of your...
Are you asking if we've ever been seen in the same room?
Well, no, more with Pat, because you had your... Frankie Goes to Hollywood thing. And obviously, Barry's a big Eurasian man.
Well, because they're both kind of avowedly homosexual, that presumably was into them as well.
But you might have liked Europop.
I might have. But no, I didn't ever go and see Jimmy Somerville.
He's still putting out albums.
I bet he's solo albums. Oh, albums, you said. Yeah. Right.
Bad man.
No, well, I tell you what, probably next week we'll have a special message from Jimmy.
Yeah.
Okay, fans go bananas finally on the great myths of football theme. Suggest three. One, that Lucas is a particularly bad or even average player. This guy was voted Brazil's player of the year when he was 19. Well, that was then, I think, is possibly the answer to that. But interestingly, that Rooney is wasted on the wing, which is a typically British striker-centric view, according to Fans Go Bananas. And thirdly, that Benitez is bad on the transfer market, whereas he says he's pretty much transformed the squad. I don't know how you feel about those three. Do you think those are
certainly
all
certainly the second
fallacies?
One I've got sympathy with. I think Rooney actually does a very good job out on the left.
Right, okay. Good.
You can't argue that Benitez has transformed the squad.
Yeah. Whether for better or worse, is open to debate.
Yeah. But yes, he does actually cite you in his second point. He says that you need hard-working, tough-tackling players to close down the increasingly important attacking full-back position. Just to ask Brainathan Wilson, as he dubs you. There you go. That's post then. Back to the Premier League this weekend. All sorts of excitements.
Where?
There were all sorts of excitement.
Where is the excitement?
The KC Stadium, as West Ham go out in the new Katy Perry lingerie-styled kit. fantastic.
For
what
anyone
else?
Who hasn't seen that, it's worth looking up on Google Images or whatever.
I'm sure they've seen plenty of boobs in West Ham jerseys before. Yeah. Etc. Now, you were asking about the excitement. Most people would point your way towards the clash at Anfield on Saturday, Liverpool taking on Man City, battle of those contenders for the top four slots, etc.
Well, at the start of the season, people would have looked at that fixture and said maybe that could be a battle between two potential title winners. Now it's more of a mid-table nothing match the way things are going.
Like Tony Hart, they just can't stop drawing.
Yeah.
Five in a row now in the league, but they are still a place above Liverpool, despite the fact that Liverpool have played a game more. How do you rate City's chances of putting themselves on the map?
It's a tricky one, because historically City have got a pretty poor record at Anfield. I mean, they've only scored one goal in the last six league trips there. I remember, I think, only one victory in the Premier League. I think Nicola Anelka scored a couple of goals. I seem to remember 2003, possibly. But God, you know, Liverpool have so many injuries. City, you've got to think that, you know, if they have serious potentials to two charged for title, they've got to go for it tomorrow, I think.
Mm. You mentioned the injuries. Gerard Agger and Glenn Johnson, some reports that they will be fit to feature against Manchester City in some shape or form. Also, there's word that Benitez might be giving a first start, historically enough, to Alberto Aquilani. Bum, bum, bum. Excited about that?
You should probably. What are your thoughts on that? You know more about him than any of us.
No, I don't. But we've been through my paltry thoughts on Aquilani often enough. It will be good to actually have a proper look at him.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mm.
Excellent.
But there's going to be a lot of. It's not going to be easy for him, because they've sort of down to the bare bones, as Harry Redknapp is prone to say. So it's going to increase the pressure on him, which is kind of not ideal for his first start in a Liverpool shirt.
I mean, I'm also interested in the Sunderland-Arsenal game this weekend. You know, you have Arsenal, they've got injuries to Kieran Gibbs, Robin Van Persie. I was going to ask Barry about the placenta treatment, which has been certainly dominated the news in the sort of Monday, Tuesday.
It's trending.
Yeah. Well, you're probably asking me, because my dad's a vet and I have in the past seen animal placentas and swept them up from the yard. The only thing I can say for them is they are very nutritious if you eat them.
Have you ever eaten placenta?
I've never eaten one, but our dog absolutely loved them, adored them. Right. And as soon as a trailer arrived in our yard with a cow or a sheep in it ready to give birth, her little eyes would light up and she'd be hanging around waiting to get her chops around the placenta. Whether or not rubbing it on an injured ankle is any good, I don't know, but sure, it can't do any harm.
Well, do you rub it on or do you inject it into the muscle?
Well, I think he was quite vague about his doctor's methods, but as far as I know, it was just going to be massaged into the ankle.
Mm.
So, you know, what harm can it do?
All right, well, Arsenal starting this run of games without Van Persie, placenta notwithstanding, and Sunderland a terrific record at home where they've won 4 of 6, as you know, Barry.
Yes.
Yeah. So is this going to be the first of the many blows awaiting Arsenal in their Van Persie period?
I don't like making predictions like this because I'm invariably wrong and then you get accused of not having a clue about anything. I would imagine Arsenal will win that game.
Really?
Yeah, I think Sunderland might have been able to threaten them had Kenneman Jones been available, but his suspension, I think Sunderland really lacking something up front because Darren Bent had that great start of the season, I think.
He's gone off the boil a bit.
To fade. I mean, missing the penalty at Tottenham, poor performance in Qatar. But the Kenneman Jones thing, it just occurs to me, the whole suspension, the way it's handled is nonsensical, that he gets a red card for violent conduct, which I guess is fair enough because he shoves over Ilunga, but it's a little shove to his chest. And he gets a 3-match ban for it. And yet, you can make 2 leg-breaking tackles, get a yellow card for each, and got 1-match ban. Surely it'd be far better. Every red card, you have a panel who meet the, you know, on the Monday after the game and says, OK, that's not that bad, that's 1 game, that's horrible, that's 5. And yeah, you've got, obviously you have
that,
guidelines.
That would be a sensible thing to do.
It would be, wouldn't it?
That's the problem.
Also, Sean, you were mentioning Man United against Everton. United, I managed to forget this in all the international excitement, have lost 2 of their last 3 games.
They have, and Everton, I think, have won 2 of their last 3.
They have. Away.
What's interesting, or sort of interesting, is that Everton played United the second game in the Premier League, and Everton won. This was back in August 1992. And since then, Everton have never won in the league at Old Trafford. United, I think, have won 13 out of the 16. So you've got to think that, you know, it should be another home win for United. Although United haven't been playing well for the last month or so now. So, you know, Everton, you never know, might nick something.
They might do. Excellent. Well, there you go. All sorts of other excitements there as well. Bolton Blackburn on Sunday and Stoke Portsmouth. Spurs against Wigan. Where are the other ones? Birmingham Fulham. Burnley Aston Villa and Chelsea Wolves. Is Frank Lampard out for 6 weeks or something?
Yeah, he is.
Yes.
Yeah. How much is that going to impact on Chelsea?
Well, I don't think it'll impact on them on Saturday against Wolves, but I think it may do in the run-up to Christmas. And as I've said before, I think Chelsea, we might start to see limitations of their squad coming off in Cup of Nations, even though they have an easy January, or easy-ish January. You then have a knock-on period next month, which is what Arsenal found 2 years ago. Mm. And I think that game, the game at KC Stadium, Hull-West Ham, is actually quite a significant one in terms of relegation. I think were Hull to win that, you'd suddenly think, well, maybe they're not as doomed as we'd imagined.
Mm.
And equally, were West Ham to lose it, I think the alarm bells will be ringing quite loudly at Upton Park.
Indeed.
You mentioned Hull, and it is quite important for them and Portsmouth to get as many points as possible as they can now, because they're both going to be hit even harder by the African Nations Cup than Chelsea are, particularly Portsmouth. I think they've got 6 players and 6 important players who are going to be there.
Hmm.
Do you think managers factor the African Cup of Nations into their equations when buying players? Or is it something that suddenly crops up and they go, oh, bugger, I never thought of that?
Well, it really wouldn't surprise me if one of the reasons Wenger let both Adebayor and Kolarov leave this summer is that he knows they're not going to be available for 2 months after Christmas.
Hmm. Well, there you go. All excellent points. And that is the Premier League weekend that awaits us. We'll be back to round it all up on Monday, as usual, in Football Weekly, so make sure you join us for that. Many thanks in the meantime, though, to our bumper panel today: Sean Ingle, Paul Doyle, Barry Glendinning, Jonathan Wilson, and back at the controls, producer Peter. We'll speak to you on Monday. Have a lovely weekend.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.